Welcome to the new era of Tommy Summers' Three Sides of the Coin. I got rid of all the fucking idiots. Now I just have my buddies with me. I've got Tim Colletti from Arch Allies. I've got Dave Moody and Michael Schneider from Hairball. Doesn't get any better than this. We talk about Kiss, we talk about rock and roll, and we talk about how Vinnie Vincent redirected something. So check it out.
Visit threesidesofthecoin.com. Subscribe on YouTube. Follow and rate us on Spotify. Subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. We appreciate it.
Three Sides of the Coin. Talking all things Kiss.
I want to rock and roll all night.
You're listening to Three Sides.
Are you looking for official Three Sides of the Coin merchandise? T-shirts, hoodies, and more? Visit shop3sidesofthecoin.com. We ship worldwide.
Welcome, Three Sides listeners, to a very special episode of Three Sides of the Coin. I am your host, Tommy, as you know. We don't have to deal with Michael today, and we don't have to deal with Mark. And unfortunately, we can't deal with Lisa because she's busy. So this is going to be a really cool, special, different episode. And I have three incredibly wonderful guests who are all very accomplished musicians, who are great guys, and just really kind people. I hope you guys have friends like I do in these three lunatics. The first one is Tim Colletti. He is with Arch Allies, and he's a guitar player. Then there's Dave Moody, who is a bass player, guitar player, and mostly the singer in Hairball, or one of the three. And then Michael, which you know, we've had him on the show before. He is the guitar player in Hairball. And Mike and I have been friends since we were 17 years old. Dave, I've known for 3 or 4 years now. And Tim and I have been friends for probably close to a decade. Reasonable?
Yeah. And we've been Kiss fans since we met.
Yeah.
Yes. And so one of the general conversations that we always have, even if we're talking about something that has nothing to do with Kiss, but we're trying to solve a problem, inevitably one of the four of us will say, so what would Gene and Paul do in a situation like that? And we live by that. And in fact, Michael has even said to me that if you can't find all of the answers to life in the first 10 or 12 Kiss albums, you just ain't listening.
So, or you're asking the wrong questions.
Yeah, or you're asking the wrong questions. So I didn't really have any kind of a layout of where I wanted to start. Is there something any one of you guys would like to start off with?
I will just mention that actually Paul's guitar tech, Fran, when we played a show with them where they were in non-makeup and played, the first time that I met Paul, where I actually got to speak with him, of course, I was a geek and got their autographs earlier, but Fran pulled him out of a dressing room in, I believe it was Arizona. And I was telling him what a mentor and how much of an influence he had on my life and in a positive way. And I told him that exact phrase. I said, we often, when we're in business, our friends, we often go, what would Gene and Paul do? You know, let's learn the lessons from Kiss, who laid out the footprints in the snow. You know, we can learn from their successes and their mistakes, because all life's lessons are right there. If you haven't figured it out by Unmasked, there is no hope.
But there are a few answers on the Elder and Creatures.
There are.
Your end of the lesson, Major. Yes. What have the other two, Tim and Dave, have you guys met any of the members before? Tell us a little bit about that.
Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, I have. I've mentioned several times, and actually had a chance to get signed by Gene back in like 2003 with a band called Magnetic Flux, and he was very generous with his time on that, and super cool. And I've met Paul a few times, and I've met the guys. Always genuinely kind, always nice, and treat us with respect. So, you know, being a fan and getting to see those guys up close and personal, and actually have conversations with them, and to be able to spend time in the same room with them is pretty special stuff. So, and it makes you feel good knowing that they're good people, and you hear it all the time, and for it to be true. Whenever you actually get a chance to be, you know, have an audience with them, it's pretty spectacular. So, yeah, I've met them before. Really, really nice.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, I've got a pretty interesting. The first time I met Paul was actually in Nashville. Would have been summer of 99 at Summer NAMM, when they used to have Summer NAMM down there. Paul was down there representing Washburn at the time. I was down there on business as well. And I happened to know the head of Washburn through business acquaintances. And he kind of finagled 10 minutes for me to kind of hang out in Paul's room with him before he went out and signed autographs. And, you know, again, this is 99. So it's 4 years after they got the makeup back on and things like that. So it was pretty exciting, but he was in full makeup and costume sitting in this room. He had just become a father. I had just become a father. And we spent 10 minutes more talking about how scared to death we were about being fathers. And it was more like a human moment, but it was really cool. Because again, someone I looked up to since I was 6 years old, you find out that they're just a human being who put on their spandex one leg at a time or what have you. You know, I've met Gene briefly. I met Ace briefly, again, primarily at trade shows and stuff like that. But the meeting with Paul was really cool because it was just the two of us and we talked more human stuff instead of the, oh my God, you changed my life, which I did say to him. And I said, and 10 million people before me have said the same thing, but it's important for me to share that with you. So, but it was great. And he was a very, very gracious, warm person. And we just, like I said, talked about being dads more than anything else. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah. That well, sounds
it, like you said, though, he puts his spandex on one leg at a time, like we all do. But of course, the difference between us and him is when he puts his leg in the spandex, he makes platinum records.
Exactly. I knew that was coming.
His leather pants are not lined with silk; they're lined with $100 bills. So,
right. Yeah. In cod piece.
And believe me, I don't say that. I don't say that out of, you know, sarcasm. I say that out of 100% jealousy and what have you. What I'd give for a day of his royalties. I'd be living on a beach someplace. So. God bless them. You know, they clearly they're the reason the four of us are sitting here talking about them today. So,
well, and it's nice to see that here's four more people that have all had positive interactions with the band members that they've met. Everything has always been wonderful as far as I'm concerned. So for any of you people out there that are listening to someone saying that they're greedy or they're this or they're that, it's just simply not true. But again, it's like anything else. It's all in how you approach people. And what you say to them. If you go Chris Farley on them from Saturday Night Live, you're dead in the water. You know, you got it. You have to approach them in a humble manner. So I want to go through each one of you. I've got a question. I want to start with Michael and we'll work away the other way. What was the first Kiss album you purchased? Or got as a gift?
I believe it was Kiss Alive 1. I had friends that had the records, which was first exposed me to it. A friend, Dan Fisher, it was Kiss Alive 1, but it was that. And I remember the magic of the sleeve that they had inside there that had, you know, the pamphlet that showed them through the years. And, you know, all of the stories, you know, Dear Earthlings and... all of that stuff. And that's, to me, that's Kiss unique. And there you go.
Yep.
You know, there was the. But, and boy, do I hate myself for taping those to my wall and ruining them. And I wish that I still had my original ones with me today, but that was it. And that's what drew me to the instrument of guitar and launched my life in music was where the passion really stuck in. And strangely enough, if we're just BSing and talking about Kiss in our lives.
That's exactly what this is.
I learned things because I was tied into this being a musician mentality of it had to be technically great to love it or for it to matter. And years later, I realize what really drew me to the instrument were the crushing power chords that our Detroit Rock City and Cold Gin, and as much as I was an Ace Frehley fan, and yes, I dressed up as Ace when I went to the Dynasty thing, and he was my hero and my idol, but when it came time for the show, I realized that it was really Paul's rhythm style of playing, those Pete Townsend, da-da-da, you don't just hit an A chord, like, wouldn't you like to know me? When that first big power chord comes in, da-da-da, that's very much a Paulism in his rhythm playing, that he's got this arm swinging power that translates in his playing. And it took me a while for me to give myself permission to like things that are so simple. So when people criticize Kiss musically and all of that, I feel like they're missing the point, that it is just sound and attitude and energy. And when I saw Kiss live, I found myself drawn to those elements. And then all these years later, I'm still chasing it, and had to almost give myself permission to like rock and roll, what I know to be rock and roll. You know, it's okay to like all of those other things, but as a Kiss fan, it's like, come on, man, I can appreciate Yngwie Malmsteen, but there ain't nothing like watching that curtain drop and what it does to you as a kid when those big chords hit you, and that's what was important. And I became to understand that and give myself permission to like, this is the sound, this is what drew me to rock and roll, and that's okay. And here I am almost 60 years later, and I just haven't grown up, and I still enjoy it as much as ever.
Okay. Well, before I
want to add I'll just add like a little music nerd note to that, though. And I agree with what Michael is saying, but there's also in Paul's songwriting, there are moments of chordal complexity, not complexity per se, but it's more than just a root five of power A. I'll use the bridge before the solo in I Want You, where you have the minor sevenths, that progression, and you know, that spoke to me as well. It's like there's something more than just that power. Ooh, there, you know, when I listened to Kiss Alive 2, when I got it, I was what, 8 years old? But I heard that, I didn't really quite understand it, but I'm like, there's something more there. There's something underneath the layers. But then again, to your point about simplicity isn't necessarily bad, I'll speak to the Beatles. Like, learn a Beatles song. If you're strumming on a guitar, it's not that hard to do. There's something, it's more not just about the chords being simple, it's about how they're organized and the energy behind it. So I agree with you, but I think Paul, quite honestly, is very underrated as a rhythm guitar player. That's my opinion.
Was Alive 2 your first record then?
Alive 2 was my first that I bought, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. And then shortly after, double platinum, and then I would spend my whole time looking into the mirror image, like what would I look like if the makeup was on my face. Hours and hours of my youth wasted doing that.
So were you holding the album up like this?
Oh no, I just laid on my stomach listening to it, and I just heard, like, looking down into, like, what would I look, what does Gene look like behind that? I bet he looks like me. And I, like, back away enough so that my size of my reflection perfectly met that embossed image in there. Yeah. Yep. Awesome. And then my grandmother got me the Peter Criss solo record for Christmas.
She really didn't like you, did she?
That was because the least threatening of the four. My nice little Catholic grandmother. So we won't go into that, though. That's a whole other topic.
Okay. Well,
it's really a big track on that Peter Criss record, Tim. I got to know.
What's that?
What's your favorite track on the Peter Criss record then?
Yeah. I'm going to be completely honest. I couldn't name one if it bit me on the ass.
Well, here's your choices. I'm going to love you. You matter to me. Tossing and turning. Don't let me down. That's the kind of sugar Papa likes. Easy thing. Rock Me Baby, Kiss the Girl Goodbye, Hooked on Rock and Roll, and I Can't Stop the Rain.
I Can't Stop the Rain, great song. I don't care what anybody says. That's a good song.
I love
it. It's a good song.
I love this record.
It really is. It really is. It's a really good pop song.
I'm gonna draw a blank.
Okay, fair enough. Dave, what was your first album?
I was 6 years old, and I was sitting on my porch when the delivery man came COD and dropped off some albums. And I went inside. He asked me if I would take them inside. I got inside, started flipping through the albums. And, of course, there was a lot of Johnny Cash and Merle Haggard and Waylon Jennings, where I come from in Kentucky. But there was one album in particular that hit me, and it was Kiss Destroyer. And whenever the minute I saw it, I took it out. And everybody was still asleep. And I went over to the record player, pulled it out, put the needle on the record, and was infected from that moment forward. It's never left me. I mean, I can honestly say, and people laugh at me whenever I tell them this, when I was 6 years old, I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life. There was no going back. I was infected with rock and roll at that point. And it has never left me. It's never wavered. I've just always been, good or bad. I've always supported Kiss and everything that they've done, and the best thing that I ever got from them was the work ethic part of it, because nobody worked harder than they did, and they would say it in interviews. They would say it in their songs. They sang of empowerment. They sang of personal power. They sang of of winning, positive attitude. All the stuff that I carry with me today comes from that mindset and that can do thing that they have and that they beat into our brains. And man, I couldn't be more thankful for it, because it was just such a moment for me. Whenever I got a chance to listen to that record, it was just mind-blowing. And I would listen to it and I would flip it over and I'd look at the album cover just like you all did. And I would read the liner notes and I would, the whole deal. And I remember how it smelled. So do you. And it was just an amazing time in my life. And it took me from that. There's a BK and an AK, before Kiss and after Kiss. And AK is still going. And I cannot thank them enough. And man, cool stuff.
Hey, if I could just jump in. When you talk about history and the way that it feels, you talked about the work ethic. And I think the respect that AK, that we know now, how the work ethic that they had and what they did. But none of us probably had any idea that that was going on before they took the makeup off. I mean, I personally looked at those records and they didn't seem like real people to me that really had to push cases and the work. They were just these mysterious creatures and it was mystery. Now, years later, the books come out and we read about how they, had holes in their shoes and, Paul goes into Bill of Coin's office to ask for a raise and you find, and their credit cards are maxed out and you find out traveling in a station wagon and just the incredible stories. But me personally, and I think most of us didn't know the work ethic until later, that they were just superheroes that we assumed were just millionaires that were probably, just limos to the mailbox. And that wasn't what it was, but that's part of the magic of the suspended disbelief that they created that was just this larger than life hype, because we just didn't know. And they protected us from what we didn't know. And they presented us with the magic that was Kiss. It was only years later when they started writing books that you really realized the work ethic? Or for me personally, I'm speaking for me, but you guys better back me up on it, because
I think that's an interesting point that you said, that they protected us from the truth. That's Michael, we're friends, so I don't, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but that's a brilliant point, is whether they did it consciously or not, you know. And I think as every album went by and as Bill had more of an effect on exactly what they said, what they did, where they did it, and how they did it, it probably became more apparent to them that they needed to do it by the time they hit their peak. But the concept of protecting all of us, because we were all kids at that time, what we knew about putting on a show of that scale, especially in that day and age with the technology that they had compared to what's available today, you know, it's unbelievable what they pulled off and how it was like night after night after night. And they did a great job, like you said, of protecting us from any negativity, any bad stories. I mean, full magazines that would come out with stories of being on the road with Kiss and, you know, all this stuff. And it was all positive and it was all dreamscape. So, you know, a lot of them all, you know, claim that it was their responsibility or their idea, but the collective group, that just to stay to that level of commitment all the time, that's insane. It's crazy what they went through to protect that image.
Well, there's a reason that why a lot of people are successful. There's a reason why certain people are successful in the industry, and there's reasons why they are not. And if you look at their work ethic, that's where it's defined, I believe. And thank God for Kiss for me, because they, as Happy has said and as Tim has said, it's so unbelievably ingrained in me that you have to work hard. I mean, I got it from my dad too, and I got it from my mom, but I really, really got it from Kiss. I really, really got it from those four guys who did what they did in the beginning. And to see how hard that they worked and the dedication, and that has never been lost on me. Never, not for one second.
Well, do you guys all think that it was easier then to do what they did than it would be today?
Internet.
Yeah, you know.
One word. Yeah, they didn't have to deal with that nonsense, but it's still a colossal amount of effort to keep everything controlled, to keep their image controlled, to keep all that. Today, it would just be so much harder to do it.
Ghost did it. Ghost did it for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ghost, and we so didn't did, know, we so didn't did know it was Tobias, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you got Sleep Token now, which is like the next, you know, who are they band? And they're getting big enough, much like what happened with Ghost. They got big enough that enough people started recognizing them from the tattoos on their hands. The same thing with Slipknot and what have you. There's just so much exposure and so many things that they can't control now because of the internet. But I love that it hasn't stopped bands from trying to do this and trying to carry it forward. I think it's awesome. I love the mystery, because it takes me back to when I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And that mystery is what I think Michael was referring to before. It's what drew you in. It's like, I don't know these people. I knew what Peter Frampton looked like, you know? He didn't change, you know?
Yeah.
But I had no idea who these guys were, what they, you know? And then they come on and they put the TV movie out, and Gene's voice is pitch transposed and whatever. I mean, it's like, I don't know anything about this as a human being. It was brilliant.
It really was. And no one's been able to top it since. Would all of you agree with this statement? Anybody that doesn't like Kiss hasn't taken the time to actually listen to them.
Yeah. I would agree with that statement, but I also understand where people's hangups are, that they can't get past, they're overthinking it. Mm-hmm. And I think that they don't give it a chance because they think it's just image over substance. And that's couldn't be further from the truth. You could listen to, you know, Destroyer and get all the substance you want. It's just a great party, rock and roll party album. And it just, if you don't like to feel good, I guess it's not your thing. But Yeah, I can see where people would not get it. They just don't give it the time. And I think that, I don't know, man. It's, I think that people cheat themselves out of it because they just look at the image of it and they don't think that it's musical or that you should even give it the time of day. And I don't agree with that at all. So yeah, I would agree with that statement.
It used to bother me as a guitar player learning to play all of these different artists that I like and learning the guitar parts and the harmonies and the pieces, and people that would be wearing their AC/DC shirt and their Aerosmith or Ted Nugent. And as a musician learning this stuff, I didn't really think that Kiss was really inferior to these bands. To me, maybe it's in a way that you measure importance, but I didn't necessarily find any of these other bands. I mean, Highway to Hell is not a lot more complicated than Dr. Love is, or a lot of the music, and I love them all, but I just felt like people were treacherous because of the makeup, and it kind of bothered me when I was younger, because I thought that Ace was as brilliant in his phrasing, in his style. And I mean, he's just such a melodic guitar player. And to me, like what Dave was saying, it's the, like, you're overthinking it. These are all rock and roll bands. And to me, the fundamentals of rock and roll were there in spades with Kiss. And to me, that's musicianship. That is musicianship. You're telling a story, you're evoking a feeling, and it's like, to me, Detroit Rock City and Shout It Out Loud are as important as Highway to Hell. And, you know, you fill in all of those other greats, you know, Toys in the Attic, all of them. I think you're really splitting hairs if you're, now you're just talking about the flavor that you like. It's like, you like that, but you know what? I like Kiss. And if you think that, it's all about groove and the feel and all of that. And we just talked about Paul's mannerisms and his rhythm playing. That's honesty. Angus Young, there's honesty in those three chords. And there is just as much honesty in Paul's playing, and, you know, through my eyes. And it used to bother me. I mean, there's no right or no wrong and nobody to win. But as a kid, I felt like that is like, are you trying to tell me, because I know how to play all of these songs and I love them all, but if you're trying to tell me that Sick as a Dog or whatever, all things that I like are more complicated or inner working, you know?
We lost him.
Well,
he'll join again.
I can carry on from what he was saying.
But please do. But can I? Yes. I want to interject one thing before you start.
Yeah.
What, as you roll through this, why do you think AC/DC gets a pass?
Oh, AC/DC is they're a religion.
No. And I get that, Dave. I'm just saying from like what Michael was just saying.
Dave, my phone died. Yeah, from what Michael was just saying, yeah, his phone is dead, but he's gonna come back.
Simone Rain.
What they're
proving here, Tommy, is that rock bands all do live in the same house together, like the Monkees.
They're best friends.
So I feel like, you know, I mean, you know, AC/DC. It's a juggernaut, but I don't know that they get a pass. I think that there's more of a Kiss. How do I explain this? AC/DC is so powerful live that nobody wanted, just like Kiss, nobody wanted them to open up for them. Nobody. And it was all because of the energy of that band and the music of that band. It engulfed everything, and it just left the crowd wet after a show because they were like, holy crap, what just happened? And Kiss was a different animal.
And I love AC/DC. And so Pass is maybe wrong. I guess it's more for me a kind of a situation where you'd think that anybody that would like AC/DC would also like Kiss, because they seem so similar to me.
I think in the grand scheme of things, you have a lot of crossover in that Venn diagram, if you will, of Kiss fans and AC/DC fans, because there's a lot of similarities where it's just, it is about rock and roll and it's about power and whatever. They do it a little bit differently, but I'll say AC/DC over the years, they haven't been, it hasn't been a negative comment, but we've all heard like, wow, they've written the same record 10 times and every record comes out sounding amazing. Yeah. So there's a little bit of this, wow, they really stick to the core, you know, G, A, and D chords, but yet they come up with an inventive way of taking those chord phrasings and doing something different every song. I think they get the pass that you're referring to based purely on the visuals. Had AC/DC decided to glam it up a bit, maybe it would have been a different presentation or a different reception. You know,
but yeah, but I agree with you on that.
But the example I would use on this is, and I forgive me if I have the song wrong, but I believe it was Hard Luck Woman. When it was released, that the radios played it or whatever, people liked it because they thought it was Rod Stewart. And then they found it, or was that Beth? I apologize for not knowing which one, but it was Hard Luck Woman. And then they found out it was Kiss, and then all of a sudden it was kind of like well, which states your case right there. It's, I think there's a certain faction of people that can't get over the look, or what have you, or discredit the validity of what they're doing because of the additional, the circus, the show. And for them, I'm like, you know, hey, you have the right to like what you like or don't like, but you're wrong.
Fair enough. So,
I agree with what Tim, Dave, I agree what Tim just said.
I'm Go sorry. Ahead. Do you guys want to move into the other room so at least you can sit together on camera?
Yeah.
They're going to give us a tour.
Yeah. Give us a tour of your lovely queen size bed hotel room.
Okay. This is our hotel room.
Nice.
That we're sitting in lovely Orlando.
Yeah. We're Orlando, Florida doing a show. You're traveling. So we're pretending. Like we're like little play Kiss, you know, in our little band, you know.
There's our view from our room there.
Beautiful. Yeah, because it just feels to me like there's just so much judgment all the time regarding the makeup that it overshadows everything to the point where there are people who won't even give them a chance.
You know, I think that
I agree with that. And it goes back to what I said a moment ago about the style over substance thing. I think Kiss has both. I think they have style and they have substance, and that pisses people off. So yeah.
I think any band that reached a certain level winds up attracting modern day term haters. I know plenty of people who love Alice Cooper, but you have this line. It's like, oh, I like old Alice Cooper when it's the Alice Cooper band, and the new stuff when he became a hard rock band. Oh, he was just selling out. You know, again, you get that. The bigger you get, the more opportunity you have for people to either not understand what you're trying to do, or it gives them an opportunity just to crap on something. The evolution of these people, the evolution, even pop artists like Madonna or whatever, or U2, who continue to evolve and change and what have you. The best example I can come up with, honestly, of a band I absolutely love is the band Muse. They have evolved and they, you know, and, but for whatever reason, maybe it's because they're English, that the media loves them and will never say anything negative about them. They're also unbelievably gifted musicians and they put on an amazing show. But I think, like I said, Kiss reached such a scale of heights that you're going to attract haters. Mm-hmm. You're just going to. You know, anyone at that scale. Granted, I don't think I've ever met anybody who said, I don't like AC/DC. I don't think I have. But, and again, they would be wrong. So, you know, what's not to like?
They would be wrong.
But at the end of the day, I think what it gets down to with music, which is the proving ground, or what does it matter, is the fact of, here it is all this time later, and guess what records I'm listening to on the airplane while we're flying to Orlando? It's like, am I listening to Emerson, Lake, and Palmer? I'm not. Am I listening to Yngwie Malmsteen? I mean, he's awesome. It's I'm amazed with it. But you know what? What I was listening to and playing, I'm still listening because that the music just holds up right there with all of this stuff. And maybe part of the reason why this discussion even got started, and maybe it's unique to us. However, my son Hunter got to see Kiss, and I'm watching a new Kiss fan be born, is because me and Tom started talking because I ran across the Tomorrow video, and I saw that footage that was very 70s, showed the trucks, and I looked at the old gear and I looked at the haircuts, and it reminded me of the climate and the environment that was happening and what it was like to be a Kiss fan back in those days. And I sometimes wonder, will Hunter understand? Like, I can only explain to him before the internet, as you talked about, Tim, that what it was like to be a Kiss fan before the internet, and how many things they made happen when there was Circus magazine and you read about stuff and you didn't know what was going to happen. You opened up those pictures and you saw them. So when I saw Kiss on the Alive to the Love Gun tour, I didn't know exactly what to expect. And that's different than what it is now today. Even if I was going to Ghost or any of these other bands that are trying to pull off and do show business things like this, it's not the same as it was when those lights went out. And all I knew is what I read in Circus magazine, what I read in the album covers. There wasn't YouTube footage of that show going on. And when I listen to that music and those Kiss records now, as I did and I still do today, and it's not only am I still taken by the sound and the layer and appreciate it now, it puts me back to junior high school, and I smell that music. Mm-hmm. I can feel, I can taste the Kiss bubble gum from the bubble gum cards when I hear that music. And I open up my lunchbox and it brings me to magical time and a place. And I think any good music like that, that has staying power, there's a reason. It evoked emotions from your past when you were exposed to that music. And Hairball can play Dress Up like Kiss, and I can expose you to a little bit about that. And I love being a gateway drug to Kiss, is what I feel Hairball is to a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, because we are just the smorgasbord of all of that. But as a kid, I lived it and I was there. So this music and this imagery, and Tommy was with me and Dave, and we saw the fourth to the last show in Rosemont, and my son was 8 years old. And when I saw the look on his face, curtain dropped,
blew him away.
And when he got to see what I got to see with my dad when I was in sixth grade, and it was full circle moment for me that magic was still there. And I hear it in every record. Creatures of the Night sounded different to me after I saw that tour. It's like, it was a good record. I listened to it, I got into it. But when I saw them at the Met Center and they opened up with Creatures of the Night and that tank opened up, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. That record became a souvenir of that concert for me. And every time I popped that record on, it put me right back to that show. And I could smell the pyro dust now when I listened to that record. And I hope that it lives on in Hunter. I hope that Hunter 20 years from now is going to watch these videos and these things, and he's going to remember that concert that he went to with Uncle Tommy and Uncle Dave and his dad, and he's going to remember
the way the rubber smelled on that Kiss balloon that he got, the splinter that he got from Eric Singer's drumstick, and the way that the heat felt on that pyro and everything, because that's what it is for me. And I told Paul this, talked about the work ethic, is like, I learned all of these incredible things in my life from Kiss that were positive things in my life. And I told him, I'm a musician and you were a mentor to me. And this is kind of what I do, doing rock shows. But honest to God, if I owned a restaurant, if I owned a construction company, I would run a better restaurant, a better construction company, because I was a Kiss fan and I watched it happen. And it was the believe in yourself and the message that in no way do I think that they were brilliant enough that they were trying to do that. They were just selling rock and roll and all of that. But as we've grown up,
we were paying attention
and we grew up. And I thought, especially with Paul, it's like you're very responsible with the messages that you send to fans and the words that you choose and the commitment that you have. He often says it in the shows, did you get what you came for tonight? I feel like they understood that in the later years, where it was kind of lost when it became kind of bubblegum and they got away from that. And it's like none of us can understand what that was like, the excesses of fame and everything. But it's another lesson that we learn. Don't get too full of yourself and understand your roots. Yeah. Another Kiss lesson, take in our own lives.
So then on a side note, he brought up ELP. You know, he also, you know, while he never listened to ELP, he never got laid to ELP either. So there's that.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think anybody got laid to ELP. So there's that.
Do you guys think, though, that what Michael was just describing is unique to Kiss? Because I agree with what you were saying. And when I'm thinking about these other bands, even Cheap Trick, I never got that from anything other than Kiss. There was something that set them apart. Do you agree?
It's the combination. It's what we was talking about. What Michael talked about was partly the music, but it was the circus. It was the everything. It was the visual. It was the audio. It was the smell. You know, I love Cheap Trick as well. And they are arguably one of the greatest American rock and roll bands, period. And they had their shtick and they had their Rick Nielsen bouncing around and Robin being the beautiful one and whatever. But none of it could compare to the visuals that we were seeing in Kiss. And that was like the leg up, right? You know, they took what Alice Cooper was doing, that maybe not directly, but Alice put it here. And they took it way further. And when you talk to Alice Cooper fans, they kind of say the same thing. It was the snakes and the guillotine, and it was all that extra. It wasn't just the music. The music was the foundation, but above and beyond it, it hit every sense instead of just your audible. Like Michael said, you smelled, you know, the rubber, or you felt the heat of the pyro. And obviously, Hairball's got a lot more experience with pyro than my band does, but we've done some shows with pyro. And I got to be honest with you, every time a flame goes up in my head, I'm like, I'm effing A3 light right now. I'm Ace right now. Just for this one second, when that huge fireball goes up, and I don't know, maybe you guys have become too accustomed to it, but when we play with pyro, we played a show down in the Dominican with ridiculous amounts of pyro. And it was already 100 degrees out and we were just roasting. But I was like, bring it. I want to feel like Ace. Just one more second. I want to feel like Ace when that blows up. And that's what I was thinking of. People in the crowd are like, oh, I wonder what a musician's thinking of when they're playing. I wasn't thinking about playing. I was thinking about, I'm Ace Frehley right now.
Right.
Going back to your question, is there any other band that did that? I think probably not for us, but if you look at the generational component of it, I mean, probably Chuck Berry, mm-hmm. probably Elvis Presley, probably Little Richard, probably the Beatles, probably the Stones. but it depends on what time you were formed in rock and roll. I mean, right. for that to happen. Point. But at this moment, Wolf, what we're talking about and the people who are in the room right now, I don't think there's one band in particular. I mean, you could throw me Led Zeppelin, you could throw me AC/DC. I don't think any of those touched what Kiss has done to all of us. And the reason why, you know, Hairball or Arch Allies or any of us are doing this is only because the masters showed us how to do it. And we took what they gave us. I've often said that Kiss went to the rock and roll store and bought everything and left us with nothing but hooks and nails on the wall, just like in the Grinch. I mean, there's nothing left. I mean, Kiss, you just missed it. Kiss just came in here. There's these two Jewish guys came in here and bought everything, and nobody else can have anything. You're gone. It's over. You know, so I feel like Gene and Paul and Ace and Peter just literally raided the rock and roll closet and took all of it, and they made great use of it. They showed us how to use it, and we're all thankful for that.
I often say that Hairball would write the book. I'm just going to read it to you. You know, Gene and Paul had the pen in their hand, along with these other groups that we mentioned. But to use their words to sum up your question, that I think holds to be true. We wanted to be the band that we never saw. And they did become that. So I think that it's true that they are unique because they are the band that you never saw. Because these bands that Dave just mentioned, well, there was the Stones, there was Zeppelin and Beatles, and they all have that fanaticism that they had there. But Kiss defied what we think of the medium. Like there were no limitations to it. That right. You have to do, like, everything is on the table. I could blow something up. We could drop from the ceiling. We can do something from Beth to, you know, you name it, and everything in between. And we're just going.
It's the empowerment that you're talking about.
More than any other band. So yeah. I think their words say it, and I think their words are correct. We wanted to be the band that we never saw, nobody else saw, and I think that's exactly what they did. Whether they had a clear roadmap on it or not, you know, Paul said sometimes we get, credited with being such geniuses when we're really a bunch of idiots that kind of fell into a golden stream. And once it started unfolding itself, let's just be glad that they had that work ethic, that ambition to just run with it and make it blow up once it started unfolding. And
made great use of it. They did everything right.
Well, and many of you guys know, you guys, but listeners know that I bought a turntable a month or so ago. First one I've owned in 30 plus years. And so I've been buying old records that I used to listen to and also discovering new stuff that I'd never listened to before. And I want to mention this one. Okay. So this is the Allman Brothers live at the Fillmore East in the early 70s.
Phenomenal.
It's an absolutely phenomenal record. I've never heard it before 2 weeks ago when I bought it.
It's phenomenal.
But when I was listening to it, I'm thinking, you know, this is really good. And I really missed out on something, but yet it still is missing this.
Yeah.
There's something intangible about, like, oh God, yes. Whereas this is more like a mellow kind of listen. There's nothing wrong with this. But I think a lot of the people that only look at this fail to see the incredible genius that is alive. Would you guys agree?
But society makes you feel guilty because they look like that. But if we're just honest with ourselves, like at the beginning of my discussion about the musicianship, and when I saw Kiss and I was all into Ace Frehley, and still am to this day, he was my hero. And like, I was trying to figure out everything, but then all of a sudden I saw Kiss and I was watching Paul, and it was our friend Brandon that actually said to me, because it was at the time of Van Halen and all that, he was like, yeah, well, I just think Paul Stanley rocks harder. And I'm like, wow, I never thought about it that way. And what is this about? What is this really about for me? Is it that my
ego needs to mathematically impress somebody with my Olympic abilities on the guitar? Is that what drew me to the instrument? No, it didn't. It was that big major crunching chord and Won't Get Fooled Again, that ringing chord in Pinball Wizard, Elton John's version, that it was that sound of that. And all of a sudden when I came across Kiss, there was no room like there was on Zeppelin records or Almond records or what was on KQ. It's like, we're going to clear all of that bullshit out of the way, and I am going to feed you, son, power chords and sonic fury that is going to want to make you do scissor kicks, and you're not going to have to live through all of these other acoustic and whatever. As a 16-year-old kid, get that shit out of my way. I want Deuce. I want Cold Gin. I want Detroit Rock City. Pound this wound up kid full of guitar, rock and roll that has that power and that sound. That's what drew me to the instrument, and that's okay.
And now in the 50s, it's the same way.
But you know, let's not think that Kiss didn't also open up a lot of people's interest in music, because I became interested in music, and then later I'm appreciating Steve Vai, and I'm listening to other artists, but Kiss opened it up for me. Mm-hmm. And then the more I learned how to play, the more I enjoyed other things. But here I am, still on the airplane, not listening to Yngwie Malmsteen, still appreciate him, still love it. I'm listening to Kiss. And that's okay.
Right. And I think that's another really important piece to this, is that it is really about the music. Because if it was just about all of the extra, none of us would be doing this today. None of us would be listening to the music. And I still, to this day, listen to the music. The music is very, very important, just as much as the image. But I don't find myself listening to Yes, because that's like, I'd rather have a root canal. It's not that it's bad. It's progressive rock. I get it. But I just hear it. It's like nails on a chalkboard. So I can understand where there'd be some people who would say, yeah, that's what Calling Dr. Love sounds like to me. It's not going to be for everybody. But I've always believed that you don't pick the music. The music picks you. Well, because you hear
that's the subjectiveness of it.
Well, one point I want to make is Michael talked about having like a primer before Kiss, where he heard The Who and he heard, you know, these other bands. Like in my example, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that are similar to myself, I grew up in a little farm town in Wisconsin, and we barely got in radio stations from Milwaukee. And the radio stations we got in, I remember, was WKTI. And what they were playing was Hall & Oates. And they were playing, you know, it was pop music. So I had never heard power chord until I got Kiss Alive 2 and put it. That was my first thing. I never heard The Who until after I heard Kiss. I heard a little bit of Zeppelin, but all they ever played was Stairway to Heaven.
Well, so how did you get the Kiss Alive 2 then?
Because I saw it and went, I need to have this. So I bought it because of what it looked like. And I got to be honest with you, Revenge of the Mutants, the Impaler record, you know, Bill Lindsey, great Minnesota band. I bought that purely because of what the record looked like. I bought the first Queensryche EP, never having heard them, because of what it looked like, because that's right. The world I lived in. We didn't have exposure. We didn't have rock radio. So the first power chord I heard was boom. And the explosion in the back of Detroit Rock City opening up Kiss Alive 2. I'm like, my mind was literally on fire. And I guarantee you there's people all across the Midwest who grew up in these smaller towns that didn't have rock radio that might have played a bit of Kiss or was playing Aerosmith. I never heard Aerosmith until I was into middle school, almost into high school. That's how, you know, but I got Kiss Alive 2. And that's my first exposure to power music. I went from literally, like I said, a Hall & Oates and, you know, Hubby the Tuba to Detroit Rock City. And that step cannot be made without an impactful, like a scar that stays with you your entire life. I will listen to Kiss Alive 2. God, if I make it to 80, I will still listen to it. It'll still be there because it meant, not that it meant more to me. And that's not what I'm saying, but I bet there's a lot of people who grew up in very rural areas like I did.
Yeah.
The first power music they heard was Kiss. And that leaves an impression that you just can't erase the enormity of that. So,
but even being in a larger city like Minneapolis, St. Paul, we had rock radio, but a lot of them weren't playing the stuff that I ended up falling in love with. So I don't know about, you know, Dave and Michael, but for me, I would go to the store and I would choose records based on how they look. I bought Diamond Dogs by David Bowie because I'm like, that's okay. I got to find out what the hell this is. Yeah. You know, I can name so many records like that. And I think
that goes back to something important, man. You know, the artwork back in the day sold the album as much as anything because, like Tim said, the exposure was not there. And Happy said the same thing. The exposure wasn't there, so we didn't have really access or previews to this music. So the artists like Ken Kelly and things of that nature had a big, profound effect on what we visualized and what we saw and what made we listened with our eyes when we was buying things, right? So, yeah. You know, so Diamond Dogs would be one of those. You know, any of the albums that I bought at the same time were kind of the same way. You would see something, you go, holy crap, I've got to have that. You know, that looks really cool. And yeah, so the art, and that's another thing that thank God for just a little bit. I think that the physicality of owning music is coming back because of the vinyl explosion again.
It totally is.
Yeah, but I love that because the artwork was just as important as the music because it made you feel more connected with the band.
And this, to me, for me, is the best Kiss album cover. I know some folks like Rock and Roll Over and Destroyer and Love Gun and all these, but I remember seeing this, waiting for it to come out, and the day it hit the market, I was there to buy it. And that was another thing that was cool, like with the solo albums. Okay, they're putting out 4 solo albums. Well, what are they going to look like? Are they going to be in makeup? Are they not going to be in makeup? Are they going to be in street clothes? How are they going to pull this off? And then they come out with the album, all 4 matching album covers. I'm like, this is better than I could have ever imagined
it would be. I don't know if you can see this. I'm going to hold it up really close. Nothing can touch that image.
Ever. I agree. I agree.
So I have my Kiss Alive 2 pick sitting right out here against my other monitor in my studio. That sits there as a reminder, as you know, again, I agree. And I love Dynasty and, you know, again, one of those albums that's kind of on that cutting edge. It's very yeah. polarizing, but that image of Gene Simmons, and that speaks to the work ethic, by the way, because that's what rung with me. And I still say it to this day. I, you know, you go meet people after a show and you're sweating your butt off and like, oh, give me a hug. I'm like, I'm really sorry. I'm really sweaty. And they're like, oh man, yeah, you're really sticky. I'm like, if you're not sweating, you're not working. And I yep. took that directly from that picture of Gene Simmons, is that is rock and roll. And if you don't walk off stage looking like that, now minus the blood in my case, but well, most of the time, but that's what rock and roll means. That's how hard you should work. And they sent that picture set the benchmark for work ethic, in my opinion, at least going into the live show.
That's interesting. So, that you see that old adage about a picture can tell a thousand words. There you go, because that was the meaning for you, and someone else might see it differently, but similar as well.
Picture can set you on your life course.
Right.
I've often heard the phrase of people say the book was better than the movie. Did you read the book or read the movie? Now this I think holds true not just for Kiss, but bands back there. Because I remember holding Aerosmith Toys in the Attic and looking at that photo of those guys and just thinking, wow, Joe Perry and Steve Tyler, these guys just look like rock stars. And I'm listening to the music and you look at the image, the, you know, the artwork of the albums. And I think your mind is filling in images. Like you're probably looking at Alive 2 and that picture of Gene sweating, and you're as a teenager in high school, you're looking at that and listening to it. And you're fantasizing or maybe thinking about images of what these shows or what it would be like to you. And now it's just YouTube and it is all just
there for you, that there, you know, there was at during that time of those records, you had a little bit of both. They gave you a book and a soundtrack, and then you'd later would go see the movie. And in Kiss's case, it's just, you know, as much as our fantasy cooked up how good the book was, holy shit, there was nothing like seeing the movie. They're the one time, because a lot of times people say the book is better than the movie. Not with Kiss. The movie is better than the book. And when you read the book, it's just going to remind you of the movie, you know? They're unique in that way, I feel.
I'd like to talk a little bit about both of your bands. I'm going to start with Tim. So Tim is the guitar player in Arch Allies, which is, again, it's a Minneapolis-based band, but they play all over the place. So any of you that are living in the Midwest, if you get a chance to go see them, please do. And they have got some really cool stuff going on, because now this is a band that's been around for 20 plus years. And Kevin Todd was the one who started it. He is now retired and moved on. And so Tim came in as his replacement, but they've also brought in Haley. And Haley is, you know, a little firecracker on her own. And she's married to Brian HBK, who is the bass player in Hairball. But they're doing all these different cool things now. And they just brought in Tyler, a new singer. Tell everybody, Tim, just a little bit about the band and what you guys are doing.
You know, I mean, Arch Allies started as a tribute to REO, Styx, and Journey. And what we've tried to do is be loyal to that as we've kind of evolved the show. And bringing in a female singer obviously opened up a lot of opportunities for us to expand out into other great 70s and 80s artists. But I guess the best way I could summarize the show is we are a full-on rock and, you know, tribute to 70s and 80s classic rock. I wouldn't say arena. I defer to my friends on the other side of the screen who have that thing pretty much nailed down. It's a great show. We try to cover a bit of ground. We've got phenomenal musicians in this band, which I think caters back to being able to replicate this music, that we're doing everything from, like I said, we still do REO and we still do Styx. We don't do Kiss. We'll play a Kiss song in soundcheck, but it's not part of our repertoire necessarily. But we've got phenomenal players. I think we put on a hell of a good show. We have a really good time out there doing what we do. And at the end of the day, it was proposed to me once, and I don't want to bring up this topic of conversation, but I'll address it, is, you know, how does it feel being a musician playing other people's music, or being a cover band, or aren't you bored with playing Journey songs? And we've all played Journey songs in prior bands in a bar to 50 people who don't care. And that's not a whole lot of fun. But I will say this, playing a Journey song to 10,000 people singing along every word, wouldn't have to even pay me to do that. It's that much fun. I get that much enjoyment out of it. So, we primarily tour in the Midwest. We've done some international work. We're trying to reach out. We just did a show out in Phoenix. So we're trying to little manifest destiny, if you will. We're trying to stretch our boundaries out. It's been an awful lot of fun in the 2 years that I've been in the band. And we just look forward to continue to grow and make the show better and better.
And so, you can find them at archallies.com.
Yep.
Correct?
Yeah.
And correct. They're on Facebook and all the socials.
Facebook and Instagram. Yep. We're not on X.
Phenomenal band, by the way. Phenomenal band.
We don't have enough crap to say to be on Twitter or X. So, we're just throughout, but what to Michael said before, I think one of the things you want to summarize our band, we take our business seriously, but we do not take ourselves all that seriously. We like to have fun, because that's what rock and roll is about. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you for the pitch. I appreciate it.
No problem. So if you have a partner who is not a Kiss fan and looks at us every week going, oh Jesus, you're going to listen to those fucking idiots again. Arch Allies is a great band to take your partner to, because they do everything so incredibly well. And to Tim's, you know, description, 70s and 80s rock. I mean, they're now doing Landslide by Fleetwood Mac.
We just launched Stevie Nicks as a character. Yeah.
Yeah. So get out there and see them, you know, just go to archallies.com and you'll see what shows they're doing. They're going to be adding more, just like I want you to go to hairball.com and see what those guys are doing. But now I want to turn it over to you two to tell everybody, because some of them are familiar because Mikey's been on before, but tell everybody about Hairball and what you guys do. And Dave, I want you to start with the fire story, because this is important.
Tell them the fire story. Oh, down in Daytona. Oh, yeah. Fire. Okay, so.
I do
the Gene Simmons bit in Hairball. And at the end of the set, whatever song we get down, typically it's Rock and Roll Night. And I'll blow fire. And no, that's not my boyfriend, fire. Sorry, it was a joke. But I'll be.
Gene would tell a joke.
Gene would tell a joke like that.
Yeah.
So I will blow fire and then, you know, throw the sword in the ground. You know the bit. Well, in Daytona, this one particular evening, we were under pavilion at the Broken Spoke. And it's a tricky bit if you don't know, if you have never done it. You got to be really careful. You could really hurt yourself if you're not paying attention. And believe me, when a guy puts combustible in his mouth and he's carrying a flaming torch, knowing that he could catch on fire and die, he's paying attention. Trust me there. So I went out front after I grabbed the sword. And what you do is you typically church it up a little bit by selling it. You know, by moving the sword around and, you know, trying to figure it out, you know, whatever. Well, at that particular time, a storm was coming through underneath the pavilion. And there was probably 2,500 people, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less. But they were there. And then every time that you do it, cameras come up, you know, immediately. Because, you know, nobody shows up to a NASCAR race for the car race, folks. They show up to see if somebody's going to wreck. So the video's up. And so I'm up there, and as I've got the fire pointed in a direction, I'm waiting for the tip of that flame to go away from me, and then I'm going to commit and blow the fire. Well, the minute that it went away from me, wind came in through the pavilion because of a storm coming in.
Circled
and flicked it immediately back towards me as I'd already committed. So I was like, oh, shit, here we go. I know what's about to happen. So I blew the fire, and, of course, it was a big flame, and it comes back, and it smacked my hair because I was wearing a wig at the time, and I wear a wig every time, and I will from now on. And the wig, you know, caught a little bit of the fire. And normally I would just pat it out, and it would be over. You know, because it has happened before where an ember hit it and I would pat it out and it would be over. Well, this one in particular kind of went to like an orb and then an orange flame. And I was like trying to pat it out. And then it just got, it graduated from there. And I just ripped the wig off and threw it down and finished the song. But yeah, it's a dangerous bit. I mean, God bless Gene. I've seen it where he's literally really caught his hair on fire. I mean, his hair.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because if you guys want to see both of them, I've got two fire things right now up. If you go to my Facebook page, Tommy Summers, and go to Reels, you can see Dave breathe fire, and then you can also see another video of him where this accident occurs. And most people were really supportive, but I do want to mention a couple of things. There was a couple of people who were total assholes and were saying that Dave is unprepared,
doesn't know
what he's doing, and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know, fuck all of them, number one, because they know what the fuck they're talking about. Secondly, Rick Stewart, who was the early, early roadie for them, even chimed in. He's like, oh, shit, we thought Gene's was going to start on fire every freaking night. And here's someone who's done it hundreds and hundreds of times. So when you go to see these performers, whether they're breathing fire or they're not, you got to have some respect and realize what they put themselves through to bring that great show to you. So like Arch Allies may not use as much pyro as Hairball, But I saw them in a thunderstorm where their tents and shit were blowing off the stage. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because I want some of you guys, I know that you listeners aren't like this, but you know people like this. Think before you speak.
Yeah.
When you know
it's amazing that the Vikings haven't called my dad to be the head coach, because I can promise you that my dad knows exactly what the Vikings should be doing. However, you know, I'd far be it from him to suit up some. I'm joking. I love my dad, and we love to talk about football and stuff. But you know, that's typical Monday morning quarterbacking kind of stuff. There's, I think Dave said it once, there's never a shortage of people that have never done what you do or try to do. People that think we'd be reckless or not careful do. But there again, we're prepared for mistakes and things to happen, you know, and it happens. And we take every measure that we can. But it's easy to sit back. And I'm sure KISS themselves have been plenty criticized for what they should do. Well, I mean, heck, that's half the premise of this stuff. We talk about KISS and what they maybe should have done or could have done. And nobody knows until you wear those boots and you live the life, and all we can do is enjoy and watch it and chime in. And we're obviously all very invested in it. And what an amazing thing to be,
I've said it before. I'll say it again. You know, anybody wants to show me how to do it, I'll give them my boots and I'll give you the sword. There's 3,000 people. And oh, by the way, here's a storm. Go ahead.
We're coining a new phrase. We'll call it Monday Morning Production Manager.
There you go. Perfect.
But that, you know what, Tommy? That's okay. You're going to have that if you put yourself out there. That stuff's going to happen,
and that's okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I felt that this was the venue to say something. And I also want to point out with Hairball that there's three singers. Okay, so there's two in Arch Alley's, but then Hairball has three. So Dave does the Gene Simmons, but then Chris Fox, who is also ridiculously talented, he does the Paul Stanley. And I'm telling you, every once in a while, I take some photos of these two guys, and I have to look twice because I think it's them. So you guys owe it to yourself to get out and see Hairball. They're much more national than Arch Allies. Arch Allies is on the rise and they're building. Okay, but with Hairball, Michael and I, he started a band called Jet Screamer, which I still think is the coolest name ever, which was the character in the Jetsons that Judy Jetson was in love with, just for you a little background. And that morphed to, he did several different things and then finally started this Hairball thing. And the way it's taken off is unbelievable. It's a very reasonably priced ticket. They give you 2+ hours of rock and roll. And I loved Mike's attitude that, okay, well, hey, here's Journey. You don't like Journey? Wait 5 minutes and I'm going to give you some Judas Priest. Don't like that? Wait 5 minutes and here's Motorhead or Kiss or Van Halen or whomever. So anybody that likes 80s rock and roll, just like the 70s and 80s for Arch Allies, you will love this band.
I'll interject. I want to add some more credence to how good these guys really are. Is, you know, we play a lot, and Dave and Michael are friends of mine, and we've been friends for a long time. I was lucky enough, we had a weekend off, 2 weekends ago, and every chance I get to go see Hairball, I go see them. And not that I'm better than anybody else because I play guitar in a band or whatever, but every show I go see, I take something away from it from a musical and a performance side. They're inspiring to musicians. And I know many of my peers in this town feel the same way about it. They set a bar that, in my opinion, and I know they're humble enough that they would never say this, I think they're better than a lot of the bands that they tribute, period. I mean, it's going to put that out there.
Yeah.
And I know they're humble enough to say, no, don't say stuff like that. But I, as a fan of Hairball, put that rubber stamp on it. I love their show. Love it.
Yeah, and Hairball encompasses everything all of us love about KISS. So you need to check it out. Now, my takeaway from the last show that we went to is there's not enough freaking beer backstage for us.
Yes. So you got to up the beer game.
Yeah, this is ridiculous. I know none of you guys drink
beer, but us moochers who come to your shows, we expect to be treated like, you know, weekend rock stars, and you know,
that's our fault.
Had a couple of Modellos, but they were warm.
I'm gonna go back and think to myself, what would Gene and Paul do? And I gotta tell you, Tim, I think I know what Gene and Paul would tell you right now.
Bring your own.
Hey, let me see that pass we gave you. Yoink.
See ya.
There's some beer on the other side of the door. Here's the thing about
Mirabal. You talk about the musicianship and those things. And yes, I feel very fortunate that I play with some of the most incredible musicians, and I played with a lot in my life. I've been very blessed there. And the talent in Hairball is the best that I've played with. But a lot of times when people say that, like you all that, I feel like what Hairball is really good at is more the attitude and the atmosphere and the energy. Hairball is not a play it safe band, because there's getting to be a lot of bands that are doing a kind of multi-tribute kind of thing like that. One thing that I feel that we're really good at is we don't play safe, because those bands didn't play safe back then. And we, like Dave Band was with Gene Simmons. Dave was bass player with Billy Ray Cyrus. There's a lot of mileage with the musicians that are in the band, and we embrace and accept that we're just reading a book to you that we didn't write. But David Lee Roth in his prime was not sitting there reading lyrics off an iPad, and he wasn't. We talk about the history. I carry those lessons. I carry that 16-year-old kid with me up on stage every time. And that kid plays loud. He takes risks. He plays wrong notes. But you will feel my 16-year-old fury every time you come and see us play. And we try to honor the spirit of it above the musicianship, whatever you think, because you'll find clips of Kiss not being perfect. And you will find clips of Hairball, but that is the type of show that we like to run. And when Hairball is working its magic at its best is when I see an 8 or 10-year-old kid in the audience next to his dad, or that might be 30, 40 years old, but yet next to that, his dad's dad that we'll call Grandpa, who might be in his 60s, who was there. Well, Grandpa, I am going to put you back in high school, and I'm going to put that lump in your throat that you remember the first time you saw Van Halen, the first time you saw Kiss. I can only give you a slice of it, and we're going to break bread, and you're going to be like, oh, I remember how great that was. You guys, I'm not trying to do a different kind of truth, great album, or I'm not trying. We're emulating when these bands broke ground and made history. And Grandpa, I'll put you back in high school when you remember going to see Kiss on the Love Gun tour. Your son is going to remember, you know, when he maybe saw that later. But the cool thing is your 8 or 10-year-old kid is going to say, Dad, I want to go see Kiss now. I want to go see. And it used to be true that I would say, you better hurry up because Kiss was still touring. Well, now they don't. But, you know, clearly, you know, the records, the music, the things that we, you know, go find those old circus magazines and Cream magazines, kid, and look through it the same way that I looked at my dad's Elvis thing and watched the Elvis movies with my dad and can kind of relate and understand it. It's like it is timeless, but properly performed back then, it was reckless and it took risks and the true spirit of rock and roll. And that's what's more important than me playing with the guitar up to my chin and matching everything excessively. I remember and fell in love with the energy. I'm not those guys, but try telling that to the 16-year-old Mike Schneider that we call Happy, because he doesn't get it. Because when that intro tape goes on and I play Kiss songs,
It's time for us all to get together and start screaming and throwing shit and going hysterical. It's time to light fireworks. It's time to take some chances. And guess what, kids? You might twist your ankle. You might light your hair on fire. Don't do it unless you've got permits and a fire extinguisher.
And good insurance.
But we do. And sometimes blood happens. And nobody has more stories of blood, fire, and guts than KISS. Why would you want to do anything else?
Well, I don't. You know, and going back to what you just said, the thing about our show is that we take it very seriously. We take your good time seriously. We mean it. We know how long, you know, you've waited for us to come into town. So when we come into town, we're going to grab you by your shirt. We're going to push you up against the wall. You're going to have a good time. You have no choice in the matter. That's what we're going to do. We take the time to dedicate to the characters, their mannerisms, their vocals, their facial expressions, everything that you could think about, the stuff that those characters did. Now you're going to look up there and you're going to go, I know it's not them, but I'd be damned if you don't give it a second look whenever you go, I know it's not them, but God dang, is that close. You know?
It is. And he's not lying, because when you look at the stuff that, because all they've got, okay, I'm going to just mention everybody here because I think it's important. So you got Billy Thomas, who's an amazing drummer. You've got HBK, who is the bass player, who's also a KISS fan. I don't know if Billy's a KISS fan or not. We've talked about it.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And then you have Drew Hart, who is one of the singers. Drew does David Lee Roth, Vince Neil. When you hear him do his Vince Neil, you're going to be like, when you see Dave do his Gene Simmons or his Brian Lee Johnson Snyder from AC/DC or any of the other characters, you're going to be fucking flipped at how close this is. And Chris, when Chris does Prince, you can hear the little nuances in his voice of how Prince actually sang those songs. So
amazing.
They bring it.
And then, like, going back to what he said,
commercial, but I don't care.
No, well, going back to what he said, the most important thing, if you take anything away from it, is that we care. And as he said, this is how we remember it. You said it about the 8-year-old, the 30-year-old, and the 60-year-old. You know, you got sons, grandsons, and grandfathers at the shows, and you know, you got daughters, mothers, and grandmothers at the show, and it's generational at this point. And we just mean it. When you show up, we want you to have a good time. We want to throw down for you. We want you to realize that we mean it. And we do. And man, do we have fun doing it. It's not a job. It's a lot of fun. And we laugh our asses off and have a great time doing it. And hopefully, you know, you're going to walk into the arena, but you're going to float out, because we're going to give you everything we got.
All right. Some of these artists don't exist anymore. So it's like, why don't we get together and celebrate Freddie Mercury and remember how much we love this stuff? Why don't we celebrate? We're not those guys, but it's a traveling convention for what's cool in rock and roll. And I often wonder, a lot of the artists, I know how they view us, because most of these artists have actually got up and sang with Hairball and been on stage, raised money for different events. I mean, even KISS had done a couple events where they, in non-makeup, that they got up and finished sets, and I don't really know how Gene and Paul or them feel about Hairball. I just hope that they would look at it and be like, they know they're not us. We are the big boys, but I would hope that they would be warmed by the impact that they had. And that hopefully I like to feel like I'm a gateway drug to KISS for somebody that might be at a county fair that KISS doesn't play or hadn't played some of these markets. But like I say, if that 8-year-old kid is going to see us do a tiny slice of it, and they're going to be like, what is that? Now I need to look at it. These Hairballs spiked my curiosity. The way that they talk about KISS, what I just saw was incredible. And I'd be the first one to say, as a kid, we're great. We enjoy it. We love it. go buy Kiss Alive 2. If you have a chance to go see it, go do it, man. It did wonders for my life. Let's share. Please do that. Hairball is about more than the band. It's about that feeling of environment and atmosphere of the collection, of the group of people that all love the same kind of thing. And even if they don't, there's nothing more fun than seeing somebody with their arms crossed that think they know and they have this preconceived notion, and a Kiss does the same thing. I don't like Kiss. Have you ever seen Kiss? It's like, it's not very often that I've ever seen anybody at an actual Kiss show not have their chin out of the floor, not walk away from there changed and feeling something, which is why they have the reputation and the staying power that they have. And I like to feel that Hairball is a little tiny baby smorgasbord of that. And I'll never know, but I'll hope that Gene and Paul feel, and Ace and all of them, that we're like an asset. It's like, wow, I'm flattered to see what we've done impact and live on. And I feel like,
you know, they do. You
just introduced the Kiss.
Yeah, that, but you know they do.
Role, that's part of the role of, if you want to call it the tribute scene, is it's helping keep the music alive. There's bands that we tribute that don't even tour anymore.
Yeah.
And we're helping keeping that music alive, and we feel as though we're doing a great job of representing the honesty of that music. And, you know, Trey, we'll use Fleetwood Mac that we just literally started adding to our set. To see people's faces, even the two or three songs that we're doing, and watch it light up and go, oh my God, I'm remembering this now. So much to what Michael and Dave have been saying, you know, some people say, oh, tribute bands, blah, 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 blah. I look at it and say, we have a responsibility in a sense to keep that music alive and going and bring it to the next generation. And what one thing I'll add to it is Tommy being arguably my favorite photographer in the entire world. And I'm not saying that to kiss his ass, and because he's one of my best friends, but there's a picture from last year in Duluth that you captured my youngest sons like this in front of those guys. Mm-hmm. And I remember you put it on Facebook and you tagged me on it. I'm like, I don't know. Why did he tag me on that? I mean, maybe he knows something that I don't know. And he's like, no, man, that's your son Karsten's freaking horns. I'm like, my son, who's 21 years old, who
into it,
you know, who lives in, they love Hairball, and it's passing it on to the next generation as well. What I refer to as good parenting. So
yeah. And if any of you listening or watching are within, you know, a reasonable drive from Duluth, go there on the 3rd of July. There is a lot of cool stuff going on, and Hairball's headlining, and there's going to be over 10,000 people there. And if you want to see a true rock and roll church worship type thing, this is the place to go. So if you can, please join us there. I think this is a great way to end this, but I'm going to end it by asking each one of you a question. I'll start with Tim. Did Vinnie Vincent save Kiss?
No, he did not. In my personal opinion, I parted ways with Kiss for a while and kind of got back to them. I parted ways, unfortunately, before Creatures of the Night. And I know what I'm missing now, but yeah, that was when I was in middle school, early high school. I parted ways with them. I discovered them again on Revenge and went, now it's about three chord, you know, rock music being played from the groin. And of course, obviously, all the things that then went on to follow. So my opinion is he did not.
Okay. Dave.
Lick It Up's one of my favorite Kiss records. Yes. That record was co-written predominantly by Vinny. It's like a glove, a million to one, and on the eighth day, all hell's breaking loose, Lick It Up. I mean, just on and on and on and on. I mean, just Exciter, you know, Not For the Innocent, Young and Wasted. I think I got them all. I'm not sure, but I will tell you this. That record was so good that I think it's better than Revenge.
Okay.
I think it's, if not neck and neck. And I feel like, you know, Creatures was probably mostly Vinny, right? I mean, was it mostly Vinny?
He had his hands all over that one as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he brought him into the 80s. If you want the tree, he helped them get into the 80s, but his self-destructiveness, while it might have saved Kiss or put them on the redirected them onto the right path, it destroyed him because he was not able to keep up with what was happening, you know, from a personal standpoint. But musically, you can't deny what the dude did. I mean, it was great. It was great. His playing was great. The songs were great. They were tasty, good, heavy, and cool. So I will say he saved them. I will say that he redirected them.
Fair enough. Okay. Michael, your feelings?
No, and I'll tell you why, and I'll try to be really quick because I'm long-winded. So if somebody asked me randomly on Facebook about a month and a half ago, what's the hardest part about being in a band? And he thought I was going to say something like being on the road, being away from family, you know, things like that. And I said, it is keeping a team directed, focused, and together, because, you know, a band is a team, it's a group, it takes a crew to execute a show, and that's the hardest part, is to keep a team together, focused with a common goal and cause. Vinnie Vincent was a part of a team at a moment of a team, but here's why it would have happened anyways, and I love Ace Frehley, Peter Criss, the original chemistry. But if I was to be honest with myself, there are two forces in Kiss that have undeniable work ethic. They have been blessed with the narcissism that demands that they control the spotlight and that they move forward. And Gina said it before, I'm not going to let some knucklehead ruin it for me. So in my opinion, if it wouldn't have been Vinnie Vincent, it would have been somebody else, because Gene and Paul would have found it. They would have made it happen, and you couldn't have stopped them. You couldn't have stopped them. Vinnie Vincent is great, and I love the playing and all of that stuff. It's true. I agree with Dave. Maybe he redirected them. But who picked the team? And who kept the team together? And now we know later that we, the elements that we're protected from, how hard it is to keep a team together, and how hard it was when the solo albums had to be made or when they had their problems with Vinny. So every team maybe has to have leaders, but good leaders can make strong teams. And you got two undeniable good leaders that have a chemistry that is Lennon McCartney, that is just a powerful yin and yang force that cannot be stopped. So if it wasn't Vinny, they would have found somebody else that would have been Vinny, and they would have made it happen. That's the way I feel.
That's a great point.
He was writing a thesis right there, man. That's like 600 level.
Well, this is the kind of shit we talk about. You know that.
That's deep, man. That's layers to that onion. I'm impressed.
But that was good. Absolutely. So what we learned.
That elevates Kiss.
All right. So what we learned then is Tim and Michael are right. Dave did good. Okay. Because he redeemed himself at the end and said redirect. Or I would have to say, if you see him out in public, kick his ass. So he saved himself. So that's good.
I will add one thing, though, Thomas.
After Unmasked, are you really going to tell me, after Unmasked, and then they bring in Vinny, that he didn't redirect them, then you're out of your tree?
No, I'm okay with the redirection piece.
Right.
I'm saying he didn't save them.
I will agree with that.
Yes. So what I'm saying is you saved yourself an ass beating is really what this came down to. So it's good. All right, so go ahead.
I was just going to say, and in all honesty, I'm not sure I ever at the time gave Vinny a chance, because at that time I had moved on and I was getting into this band that Dave might have heard of called Slayer. and Motorhead and whatever, because there was a record store that opened up in West Bend, Wisconsin, the exclusive company, that all of a sudden, when I was 14, 15, I had access to metal. And I was like, all right, you know, yeah. Like I said, the big four and all that. And it was like anything that Kiss was doing at the time, I kind of felt like I was a little bit behind me. And it took me a while to get through all that, to get back to when Revenge came out. So, and maybe it's not fair that I said Vinnie didn't, but as I look back at it now, I suppose with a little bit more of an analytical view. So I suppose I needed to add context to my comment, but he still didn't save Kiss.
That works for me.
But my end result was no different. I just wanted to hear myself talk some more.
as far as redirected goes, though, I believe that Paul and Gene understood after Unmasked and things that were going and the way audience was changing. I think they were understanding they needed to go back to their roots a little bit more and be more of a hard-hitting rock band. Vinny was just a good songwriter that they collaborated. And I'll say this to give that I agree with Ace Frehley about this. I also think that Ace Frehley had a street relationship with fans, that he understood simple rock and roll, and that's what made Kiss tick better than those guys did too. And I think his solo album is a little bit of proof of that. And if I was to be honest with myself, when I got Unmasked or Dynasty, I mean, I was listening and the Ace song sounded more like Kiss to me because they didn't go poppy. They were guitar driven and that sounded like Kiss to me. And I felt like Ace, you know, but Ace certainly didn't save Kiss at that time, but he was the magical component. But I just, my point was being, I think Paul and Gene would have found a collaborative songwriter that Vinny was, and they would have found a gunslinging guitar player. Vinny was all of those things. I also think if you listen to Vinnie Vincent Invasion and how wild that is, you can see that he needed Gene and Paul.
The real man, because
Vinnie Vincent outside of Kiss with all of that is a bumblebee of messy, you know, there's some great moments. I'm not saying there are any great things on the record, but you know exactly what I'm saying.
But to summarize, can we all agree that Vinny redirected Kiss?
No. Tommy, you're going to have to talk to this guy next time.
Okay, this is something we're going to have this.
I corrected their path. Correct. Okay. I mean, Shandy, come on, really? The Elder, come on, yes. Really? And then Creatures comes out.
I love Unmasked.
And then Lick It Up comes out.
Mm-hmm. We'll just have to have some therapy. It's okay. We'll work you through it. It's all good. You know, we'll table it for now. So I'm going to end this. I want to end this segment then by saying to you, we have homework every week. So the homework for this week is, have you seen Arch Alleys live? Have you seen Hairball live? If you haven't either one of them, then go back to what we talked about. Was there anything in this conversation that you'd like to talk about? Give us some of your point of view on the different things we've talked about today. We'd love to hear from you. We always enjoy that.
You could kill two birds with one stone, and I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, and Tim might be able to correct me about this, but I believe Arch Allies is playing with us July 3rd at Bayfront.
We haven't announced that yet, but we have now.
Yes, that's why I didn't say it.
It's out.
Hey, it's out
so now.
Now
it's out.
It's out. We're excited.
Well, then announce it right here. That's the way I understand it, now it's got to be.
Yeah.
Three Sides of the Coin is where your Hairball and Arch Allies breaking news is found. It's the media source. No, we're actually really excited to play with you guys because, again, you know, Michael, I've known you for a long time. Now, Billy's like my golf buddy. You know, for us, when I get a chance to play a show with Arch Ally or with Hairball, it's more like a high school reunion. Then like, oh my God, we got to go up and play a song. Can't we hang out here and have another beer for like 10 more minutes and chew the fat? Cause we don't get a lot of chances to see each other, but we are absolutely stoked to be playing that show. Cause it's important for us for business reasons, but it's also really important to us for, in all honesty, for relationship reasons and being able to hang out with our friends. Yeah. And obviously for Haley and for Brian, you know, to actually spend like a weekend together or at least a day together will be stellar for them. So, we are stoked. We are very excited to be playing that show with you guys.
It's July 3rd at Bayfront Park in Duluth. So it's the day before the 4th of July. If you guys are looking for something to do and you're within a reasonable traveling distance, please come. I'm telling you, it is a blast. It is like the old school early 80s Van Halen rock shows where people are just losing their freaking minds. So it's an opening act, Arch Allies, a To Be Determined, and then Hairball, and then after Hairball, Puppet Show.
Right. Puppet Show for sure.
to end it all, Tom, as we talk oftentimes about KISS, which is 99% of the time, mm-hmm. we were talking about doing something like this and all of that. I hope that anybody that has watched this sees that we are just a bunch of KISS people sharing our personal feelings of that time period, what it was like to grow up being a KISS fan, what it's done for our lives and all of that. I hope anybody that watches this will now leave and go drive their partner crazy and some of their friends by discussing all of these topics that we just discussed. We just gave a little bit of a platform of our personal stories, but everybody, there are millions that all have these stories and ways that they've affected their life. I hope we've made some people think deeper about all of this and have some fun with it. Like, I remember that, you know, that's the way it made me feel. But you know what I did, man? I lit my whole head on fire. I was, didn't even, you know, whatever it is, you know, we've all got a KISS story. And
we want to personally thank you for always being such a huge supporter of both bands. And we're very grateful. And you've given us some images that we use in our promos and things of that nature that make us look better than we actually are. And we're very grateful for that. And you know that already, but I wanted to say that to everybody. Tommy, you're just so great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And I enjoy both of your bands and we love coming out and supporting you. So I also want to hear from the Hairball fans as well as the Arch Ally fans. Tell us what you like about the bands. And again, like I said, if not, to Michael's point, jump in and let's talk about some of the things we discussed today. We'll be back next week with a new show. So guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did. Have a great week. Be good to each other. Be good to yourselves. Take care of your friends and family. We'll see you next week.
If you have something to say, leave a voicemail or send us a text message. Call 320-515. Voices for Three Sides of the Coin. Provided by LarryDavisVoice.com and by JessicaMarsVoice.com. That's Mars with a Z.